Good morning. Welcome to the FTS bet slip on Wednesday, April the 1st, Suggsy Day. April Fool's Day or Suggsy Day? I didn't plan that. Right, I've had a 40-minute conversation with Paul over Skype. We've recorded it. Apologies, you will need to turn the audio up. Paul hasn't got a microphone. It was just his standard Acer laptop, so the sound has come through quite quiet. He's quite a softly spoken chap anyway. But I'm going to let you guys listen to the 40 minutes of that if you wish to. If not, you can scrub through it and go to the end. And then everything else podcast-wise, stat of the day, etc., will be after that. But I'm going to pass you over now to that recording. Whilst people may think it is just me taking the piss, it isn't. There's some good bits, hopefully, that people can take out of that just regard to betting, because Paul, as I say in this, is one of the most frustrating individuals on the planet. But have a listen, and I hope that you enjoy it.
For the purpose of the best slip, you are known as Suggsy. We met in 2013, and you've become what I can only describe as a good friend of mine. But I have described you to yourself as possibly, well, you're certainly in the top three most frustrating people I've ever met in my life. And our meetings do usually involve going to Tottenham. Normally involve a good few beers. And there's two or three topics that we usually end up rowing about. One would be golf. One would be golf. One would be Tottenham Hotspur.
That'd be the biggest one.
And we've had disagreements about betting setups. We have, of course, had disagreements about other things. It is apt that we're doing this on a day that is named after you today, which I hadn't actually noticed when we set this up. But to have a day, April Fool's Day, named after you is quite an achievement for you. Well done.
It did dawn on me yesterday after you invited me to this that April the 1st was pre-planned.
Yeah, I can assure you it wasn't until Greg put it on our WhatsApp group. I'm gonna go into when we met, but I'm just gonna give viewers a little insight, listeners, right? I'm looking at you, so I might say viewers again, but listeners to the pod, an insight into what dealing with you is like. We have shared this morning you shared on WhatsApp a picture of the 12th hole at Augusta, one of the most memorable holes in golf, and it had 10 numbers spot over it of potential where your ball would land. So there was like 10 different scenarios, like a bit like spot the ball questions, but we had numbers 1 to 10 on the 12th hole of Augusta, and you asked, sent it to our WhatsApp group and said, where would you end up? And we're having a little bit of banter, but out of the 10 scenarios that somebody's obviously put together for a bit of fun over this period when we're quiet, you deemed that playing the 12th of Augusta, none of those 10 would have been in the water or on the green. So numbers that were clearly on water, you were declaring that they were on grass. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, that's the way the numbers looked on the little photograph. Yeah, none of them looked as though they appeared in the water.
I will post a photograph on Twitter later. It's not even remotely how they looked. The centre of number 6 is in the green. Is in the water. Centre of number 7's on the green. This is what I'm dealing with. I just wanted to get that out there so people know that you are a fucking idiot. right. So we've got. I'm not just going to make this about taking the piss out of you. It is difficult, but I am going to. I think there's bits in our relationship that's developed, and I only met you through FTS, that people can benefit from and perhaps listen to. I would class you as a typical sort of punter when we met. So I first encountered you, before I knew you were a Spurs fan or anything, at a seminar in Reading, I believe it was. You came to?
Correct. You did know I was a Spurs fan, because I remember the very, very first line you ever said to me. I walked into there, introduced myself. I said, I guess you're Ian. Hello, I'm Paul. And your opening line was, you're my Spurs man, are you?
So I
think you must have known that we must have had Twitter exchanges or something before I actually met.
Yeah. So, So that was a seminar in Reading 2013. And in that seminar, it wasn't really about betting systems. It was based on a sort of millionaire mindset and preparing people to cope with losing runs, discipline, stuff like that. We did have Will over and did a bit on horses. Chris did a bit on 4X. And I did talk about sort of briefly about compiling odds. But the main goal of me of that seminar was to get people to think differently. Because I'm a firm believer in that really is the route to success, that if people don't think differently, then they're not actually going to get anywhere. So the one thing I've never really asked you, I may have done, but probably after five Guinnesses, I might have forgotten. what made you come to that seminar? When you were doing it, what was your thinking?
My thinking was, I've been a member of yours probably about a year at that stage, and I didn't come to it with the reasons that you've given, or your mindset. I came to it thinking, pick up a couple of systems and to turn my betting into a profitable betting. I sort of semi-dismissed the mindset aspect of it 7 years ago. I didn't know any better.
No, Sherlock.
Purely a case of turn up and see what you had to say and pick up a couple of systems, and 6 months later I'd be making money.
6 months later, right. Yeah, so from there, we obviously have become good mates. And I do class you as one of my good mates. You've met my wife numerous times, and she, for some reason, really likes you. You've met my boy. Been to the football with him. As I say, we've been to many a football match now, including an ill-fated trip to Madrid, which we'll get on to later. And you've met, I'm not going to name him because he doesn't like being out in the public eye, but you've met my racing mate, and you and him have become good mates, even though he's a gooner.
Yes, that is a downside, but he's a good lad other than that. He's still worries himself, isn't he?
And disorganised like you. So we've become good friends, and over that time we have started to work together betting.
Yes.
Which I am going to say has been one of the most fucking frustrating periods of my life, and we're going to come on to that in a minute. But you actually were quite successful match betting on your own right.
Yeah, I used to just run my own set of accounts and did okay with it. Obviously, you don't make huge amounts of money on just one set of accounts, but on the sports offers, I was quite active on those and did all right with them.
So going back to sort of 2013, and you were doing the match bet, and I don't know when you started that, and a lot of people who come into FTS, I think that's the route they've taken, is match betting. They've built a bank up. I've never done it, so I know nothing about it. So obviously that starts to dry up once you've done all the offers. I know there's some recurring ones, but the new account offers, I guess you wipe your way through them.
Yeah.
So you built up a bank. You then thought of going through to improve your betting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was it that you were looking? What were your goals? Let's go back to 2030. I know you said you wanted to make money 6 months, but actually looking at the bigger picture, I mentioned in that 2013 seminar that when I started, I wrote down five goals and laminated them. I said to people in that seminar to do that.
Yeah, that, I think that was probably the first thing that got the cogs turning, because I hadn't really ever thought about long-term goals or even anything further than just turning my betting into making a profit without any end goals, without any targets in mind, just becoming profitable. And I think that's possibly the first exercise we did in the room that day, was to write out your five goals and set some timescales to them.
That's right, yeah.
And I think we sort of took 10, 15 minutes out each to do that. And that's probably what first set the cogs running, because I'd never really thought of it in those terms before then.
And where are those goals now?
I did do what we said. I did write them down and on a post note and have them up stuck in front of me, but that was 7 years ago. So where they are now, I don't know.
How long did
they last? I can't even remember them. Oh, they was in front of me for a good while. Whether I was adhering to them or not is a different question, of course.
Well, it isn't. You fucking weren't. I know you weren't. So,
well, some of it I won't.
So, just on the match betting, and I'm going to get into a topic that is going to be uncomfortable for you before we have the banter.
I'm prepared for this.
Then in, I'm going to say, I think it was May 2018. So we're 5 years old when we first met. We're going to the football. Like I say, you met my family, everything. We've become decent mates. And we're sat one day. And for people who don't know, you're a cab driver, airport taxi driver. Mm-hmm. And you said to me, I want to get out the cabs.
Yeah, it was pretty frustrating at that time. I think my words were to you were, if you ever need any help with anything, let me know. I'd be more than happy to go down that route, get out of the cabs, yeah, because I hate them.
Yeah. The key words I took out of it were that last phrase there, I hate it, I want to get out of the cabs.
Yeah.
So yeah. I said to you, well, there's stuff you can do for me, but I didn't really want you to go down the road of just betting, because mm-hmm. obviously when you're doing it for a living with mortgages to pay, this, that and the other, it is an extra stress, and you will have months where you don't make any money and you need to earn X amount to pay your bills. You know, yeah. I know what that amount is, but we won't put that out there. Just mm-hmm. I know there. So I came up with a plan of putting £10,000 into an account for you to use.
Yeah.
We went down to see Chris Jones, who you know, and Chris is a mate of yours as well as mine. And Chris is like my sort of expert, I suppose, on this match betting. I didn't know. So we went down to see Chris in Bournemouth to see his setup.
Yep.
We bought a PC
mm-hmm.
Of reasonable spec. We installed VMware so that we could have accounts.
Yep.
I doubt any bookmakers listen to me, but we got, or I got you, potentially 8 accounts that you could use.
Yes.
So you had a 10 grand bank to use, you had a new computer, you had VMware, you'd met with a guy who earns good money doing it, you had 8 accounts to use. I'm just going to ask you, for the listeners, do you class it as a success?
I made some money out of it. I made us some money out of it. Nowhere near the sort of target numbers that you were thinking of, but it helped me at the time. It helped supplement my taxi income. I would class it as a minor success. I know you would class it as...
See, this is where, for the viewers, and I'm not a listener, sorry, I'm going to hold back. It was a fucking disaster.
We made money.
We packed that project up in January this year. End of December.
We handed it over, didn't we?
End of December. And the reason it packed up was nothing to do with anything other than my frustration. Not for me, because I actually didn't go into it to make any fucking money out of it. I went into it to help a mate out and get him out of the fucking cab. And I'm the reason I'm using this, and I'm not doing it to show you out. The reason I'm using it, I think lots of people have big ideas about what they want to do. And my biggest frustration with people, and I've got you to start reading The Slight Edge, is a lot of people talk about doing stuff and want to do stuff, and then they never actually do anything to do it. And I look at that now, particularly with what's going on now with you not being able to go out to work because airports are shutting, there's no flights. I look at that now and think, you should have had a really good, decent amount of money in the bank from just doing that. Do you think that?
I suppose so. My approach would needed to have been different. I was very wary, very uncomfortable with all the slots offers, which are the more higher risk side, but obviously the potentially the bigger rewards. But I was more cautious, stuck to just the safe sports offers.
And did we not meet regularly and I told you just to fucking do it? Did we not meet with Chris in London in a pub after that? And I said to you, just do it.
Yeah, you did many, many times. But as you know from our conversations, the biggest part of my caution was I was shit scared of losing someone else's money for them.
And I told you not to worry about it, didn't I?
Absolutely, you did. You told me on more than one occasion. But I don't know, it's part of your makeup, isn't it? Really, I was more uncomfortable losing your money than if I'd have been losing my own, to be honest. Yeah.
And but the reason I bring it up is because even for people listening to this, you know, now I'm talking to people about different stakes and how much to have on things, and you know, I get at least 5, 6, 7 emails a week. This is nice. Yeah. Sorry, guys. He's got a phone call now. We don't matter now. He's off.
It's Kevin Kelly. I'm going to have to cut him off.
Tell him to sod off.
I'll cut him off.
West Ham.
Right in the middle of the conversation, Amos, Kev.
No, the reason I say it is because I get at least 5, 6, 7 phone calls, emails a week about bank sizes, what shall I stake, this, that and the other. My point to you over that period was, forget the money. What you were doing was, in effect, risk-free. Yes, it would have swings on the slots off, but it was risk-free. You've got to learn to punt at that level. And if you can't do it when it's risk-free, how the fuck you do it when it's... And, I mean, we'll argue about this till we're blue in the face. If I gave you 500 quid and said, put it on over 2.5 goals, you'd be happy to have that bit, knowing that it's win or lose. But you're not happy to go through a streak of losing 500 quid on match betting and saying to me, the bank's gone down to 9,500. It's fucking Irish to me. Sorry to my Irish friends, I shouldn't say that. It's well, fuck knows what it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. We're now betting together, and we didn't get off to the greatest start, but it hasn't disturbed me anything like what losing money on slots would have disturbed me, because, I don't know, to me, they're just totally different things.
Yeah.
Betting is something I've always... I had a rough idea about what I've understood.
Ultimately, long term, they've both got a positive EV. It's that mindset that, I mean, I'm never going to understand it. Me and you, I mean, people listening to this don't know. I have lost my shit over this with you in pubs as well, you know.
Yeah.
Before Spurs matches, when we've met a couple of hours before the game, I will never, ever understand that fucking thinking as long. I mean, I started out this by saying you frustrate me because I think you're somebody who only ever does enough to get by.
I think that's probably been the case. You have changed my thinking along those lines of that's not good enough. But yeah, that would have been my own approach to life, I think, generally, yeah.
So going back to 2013, we go back to when I asked you to do your goals. I didn't see them. I can't remember them. You haven't got them anymore. I'm going to have a hazard a guess that they weren't super, super ambitious.
I honestly can't remember them now. It's like years ago.
So basically, I wasted my fucking time in 2013 as well.
Really? It's just been a seven-year journey to get to where we
are. Anybody listening, we've had a bad night with a dog. My goals are upstairs in my office drawer. I did those in 2006, 5, 6, 7, 5, 6. I've still got them upstairs now on a laminated bit of card. I still look at them regularly. I've actually achieved all of them, but it reminds me from, you know, people think you fall into this through luck or whatever. I had fuck all when I started this. I was no different to the situation you were in, working, not earning great money, not really enjoying it. So 2013, as I say, I don't know what your goals were, but I'm going to hazard a guess they're not. So we've gone through this process. We've done the match betting thing. Fucking disaster. It was one of the most frustrating periods of my life. I'm not going to lie. And what annoys me is you don't get, I was frustrated for you, not for me.
Oh, no, I do get that. Of course I get that. You made it clear enough. Of course I got it.
So what are your goals now? We've just started this year. Obviously, I stopped that in January because I'd had enough and said, look, just knock it on the head, because we were going to fall out. And I mean, I always said to you, I'll never fall out with you over it because you're a mate, but it was fucking hard work. So now we've started betting. Obviously, we're going through extraordinary times, you know, as I'm talking to you. I mean, nobody could have envisaged this. What are your goals now?
Goals now are very much more clear and very much more realistic. I think what we're doing now, it can be turned into a full-time living. That is the ultimate goal, is to be my primary income, or my sole income, I guess. More than happy to sit in the office and play around with spreadsheets all day, which I've been doing recently for us, and Yeah, I enjoy all that. If I was making a living out of doing what we're doing, that would be, you know, that would be the end goal for me.
But I still think in you that you, I mean, you are a bloke's bloke, aren't you? You've been a, we'll come on to your football management career in a bit when we get on to Tottenham, but you've been a football manager. Without being too personal, I don't think you've ever been married.
No.
So, but you've had, you know, a couple of relationships, whatever, but you're predominantly a bloke's bloke. You love your football, your lifelong career of football management. You love playing golf.
Yep.
I think, and I still think, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I still think you like going up to the old cab rank where the guys are there having a chat and a this, that and the other.
I could easily switch off from that easily. Yeah, I mean, I'd still play golf and I'd still have me, you know, your circle of social friends in that and get down the pub of a weekend and the like. But no, I mean, I could easily change my profession, if you like, yeah. Yeah, I can cope with sitting in an office if that's what's going to get me there.
Right, okay. Well, so that's the path we're on now. Obviously, football has been taken, and perhaps we'll do this in a year's time when football's back and we can report where we are. Basically, I have sort of got you in a headlock, got you doing some Excel stuff, giving you some betting. And to be fair to me, you had, when football was on, you did say, I won't play golf this week if we're needed. We are moving to a lot of automation and things, so I think we'll both have more time. And I do want to declare on record that I'm doing it for you, because I do think ultimately, while I take the piss out of you, you are a lovely, lovely guy. I enjoy your company, you're good fun, and I want to see you do better.
And I think we can do. I think,
and well, certainly,
if you're talking about the goals now, I would say, I personally, whether you share this view, but I personally think I'm closer now than I've ever been to get into where I'm aiming for in terms of taking an income out of this.
Yeah, you are, but I still think you, well, I mean, we'll back this back like a fucking tennis match. You had a fantastic opportunity to build a lovely bank. I mean, I won't embarrass you by telling people how much you made over 18 months, but it was fucking piss poor. For the facility you had, it was piss poor.
Well, I really only made money for the last sort of 3 or 4 months of it. Once we got it all organised, yeah.
Yeah, because the first, what did you do for the first 14?
In the bank.
Huh?
It did contribute. So it made money and it did contribute to a bank.
Mm.
Not the sort of money you was hoping for.
And what did you do? What did you do for the first 14 months?
Not a lot really. Bits and pieces of just getting it organised and
I got you 8 accounts. Did we ever have all 8 accounts running properly?
No, two of them weren't, but that was more banking issues than me not doing anything about them. It was just hitting stumbling blocks with opening false accounts, let's say.
But did we not meet in a pub and you showed me a spreadsheet of accounts you'd opened and I went, that's a fucking disgrace because you just hadn't opened any?
Oh, well, in the early days, yeah.
Yeah. In the early days. Mid-2019, that was, you fucking idiot. Right. So we share a keen interest in golf.
We do.
I mentioned the Masters picture you posted this morning. It's another thing we've back, because you are, I know there's some listeners who like golf. You are a fucking enigma to me. I mean, we played with Simon, who's a really nice guy. You played at Lingfield in the FTS thing. But well, my first discussions with golf, I said to you, what handicap do you play off? And you said, I've got 3. And you seem absolutely fucking dismayed that me, as somebody who's played golf since he was 13 years of age, admittedly not much in the last 10 years, I've never encountered that in my life.
Yeah, I don't understand where there's a problem with that. I've got my main club handicap, which is the official one. More than happy to play off that every time because that's my biggest one.
Yeah, because you don't play in club competitions, you little fucking slimy fucker.
I also play in 2 different societies and they have their own handicap systems, their own guy who runs the handicap setup. So I have 3 handicaps, one for club and one for each of my 2 sort of groups that I play with. But I've got to say that you condone this system because we've organised 1 or 2 games amongst ourselves and your answer to that is to give me yet a 4th handicap.
Yeah, because none of yours make any sense. So I've got to have a guess.
Yeah, so but
Look, when you're betting, betting on Betfair, you're betting against other people. I'm not going to call them friends because I don't really know them, but I've got people on Betfair that on Twitter that I interact with. Lord Dio, Secret Sports Trader, whoever it may be, football traders that I'll interact with. While I interact with them, there may be a Saturday afternoon when I'm trying to win their money and they're trying to win my money. Because yes, I might be backing overs, they might be backing unders, whatever it may be. So we're in a constant battle, despite not knowing it and having a chat or whatever, and I'd go for a beer with any of them. I think they're all good-sounding guys, big man, whatever it may be. I'd go for a beer with all of them. I think a lot of what they talk is good sense, but ultimately, I'm in a battle with them. If I thought one of them was trying to have me over, I'd have the same view as I have with you at golf. Because it's all so fucking up in the air. Nobody knows what's going on.
Your club handicap
is ridiculously high because you don't fucking play any competitions. So you just keep that up there as your sort of leveler. Oh, well, I am 21 or whatever it is, realistically. You then declare that you had 40-odd points and can't even remember when you did it. You're an absolute charlatan on the golf course. Right, that's that topic closed.
slippery.
And our other great passion, and we could talk about this for hours now, is Spurs. I don't think either of us will dispute that we're both very passionate Spurs fans. We've taken FTS members to the new stadium. Ryan, Dave Bell, Scott Blake became, although he didn't sit with us. Obviously we meet Simon Goldsworthy in the old office, because we've been in that office. Kevin's come. Lee Staniland's come. So they witnessed you firsthand talking complete and utter shite about the Tottenham. I don't even know what it is. It's not a project. It's a mess. So the question was put yesterday on Twitter. I'm going to ask you, now you've had time to reflect. He's been gone 3 months. You always defended the Argentinian fraud. Why?
He was with us for 5 years, and four of those years he did a good job for Tottenham. He took the team, the club forward, made us more consistent, established a decent style of way of playing, and so basically he took us forward. The last year the job clearly got away from him.
Did he take us further forward then than the days when Harry Redknapp was there? And we made Champions League and we had a chance to play, a chance at the title, albeit Levy didn't back him in that winter window.
Well, I mean, he, I think it was four years on the top.
You act like we never, I mean, and you and people of your ilk, the Poch, hold him up on a thing. You act as if we'd not played Champions League football or done anything. We had one really good season under him, which was the final season at White Hart Lane. The other four seasons, he had the best squad that Tottenham have had in years. You know, Redknapp had Bale and Modric. He didn't have a great squad, which is what caught him out winning the league that year. He had a fantastic squad. You had a season when you're up against, with the greatest respect to Kevin Chell, Leicester for the league. The guy is a fucking loser. He's not a born winner.
Our season at Wembley, I thought, was quite a good one as well. I enjoyed... It was a pain in the backside getting up there and back, but I enjoyed the season of watching them at Wembley. I thought we played some good football and was, you know, we was a worthy top three contenders at the time, I think, then. And that was probably 4 years on the spin there, where we was genuine top three stroke top
but
four.
But he inherited a great squad. He inherited a nucleus of a fantastic team. He inherited Lloris. He inherited Vertonghen. He inherited Rose Walker. He inherited Dembele. He inherited Kane.
But he turned that into a consistent competitive
side. But they were team before he came. That's what I'm saying. We played Champions League football. We were knocking on the door of top four every single year then. He took the best squad that we had and won nothing. And once that squad started to break up, the players who he didn't buy, Dembele, Eriksen, etc., left or wanted to leave, Walker... He was clueless, and we're wrangling around in 10th, 11th, 12th spot. He did exactly the same at Espanyol, got them out of relegation 1 year, and Southampton okay, he got him to eighth, ninth, whatever it was. I don't see what credentials that the people think this guy is fantastic.
So I thought the four years he did well. The last year, when he went, I think it was time for him to go. I think he, for whatever reason, probably a handful of different reasons, the job was getting away from him. I think his relationship with Levy was beginning to break down. With one or two of the players were beginning to break down. And I think the interest from places like Madrid or mooted interest and Manchester United were beginning to have some kind of detrimental effects. He was definitely right that he went, even though I thought he was excellent for the club. It was right excellent. He went at the time.
You've upped it to excellent now.
Oh, good. I mean, he took us forward. In my view, he took us forward.
Mm-hmm. In my view, we had one really good year and then he went backwards to the normal. A bit like your betting. But we did get a good trip in Madrid. Thoroughly enjoyed my time with you there. I think the listeners to the pod enjoyed your travel woes. I'm not going to lie, I did. Having a nice comfy flight and hotel, I did enjoy it. But you did a massive effort for people who haven't listened. The game was on the Saturday. You left home on the
5 o'clock on the Friday morning.
Yeah, and we met in Madrid about 8 o'clock.
7-8 o'clock the following morning. Add an hour for the time difference. It was about a 25-hour journey, I think it was. 26-hour journey.
And we had a good few beers and a nice bit of lunch and a bit of fun. We went to the game. We weren't to know that the referee was going to wear a Liverpool shirt. The VAR were going to be Liverpool fans. Yeah. And the whole thing got fucked up by a ridiculous decision in the first 32 seconds. Nobody was going to know that.
And all our conversation during the day was hang in there, still be in the game after 20 minutes to have any sort of chance. You know, don't lose it early. And that was, I think, 23 seconds, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, without the referee, we'd have won the game, without a doubt. I've got no doubt about it.
We were the better side on the day.
I'm convinced without the referee and perhaps your myth of a mate not picking Kane, we'd have won it. But there we go. And then you had a journey home. We departed the stadium as soon as the whistle went. We weren't staying around to watch any of that trophy nonsense. And you then had what was the journey home like?
Well, it started with panic, didn't it? I don't know if you remember. We went into a little casino to have a beer, which ended up being about three. Then all of a sudden, couldn't hail a cab anywhere, could we? And I was in a bit of a panic as to actually when I was going to catch this bus. Made it, but I had to sprint a quarter of a mile, I suppose, from where he dropped me off to where my actual huffing and panting got on the coach and almost the last one on. So it didn't start well and it didn't continue well because I think it was the Sunday we were travelling home. It was the end of a school holiday week. So the roads the up through France and everything were obviously much, much busier than normal. And the 25-hour down there became about a 27 or 28 hour journey coming home. Missed our allotted ferry in wherever it was, Calais. So I had to wait just until they could find a space for a coach on one of the next two or three ferries. So, yeah, it was a mission, let's say.
Lovely. And I enjoyed every bit of it. I enjoyed your little texts and this, that and the other. Beautiful. But no, that was good fun. Appreciate you making the effort to come. I know you're sort of dodgering about it, but it was good, wasn't it? Other than the game, other than that first 30 seconds, it was good fun.
I'm glad I did it. It's the same situation come up. I'm not sure if I'd undertake the same journey, but I'm glad I did it on the time, yeah. I did it purely because we think that's probably the only time in my life we'll ever get a chance to do that, go to the Champions League final.
Right, I'm going to return back to betting a little bit because, I mean, and there's a couple of people who we're friends with, Gary, Kevin, and other people have heard me say, and if anybody's been to a seminar, they've heard me say this. And I sort of, you've made me think about a couple of things, believe it or not, which is fucking amazing. But I've always said, anybody can do what I do.
Yeah.
But we have talked, obviously, about risk factors, betting in big numbers. I can understand how that might stop people. You know, I think if you've got a natural progression where you've won the money, it's other people's money. So that's how I've always looked at it when I sort of got up to bigger stakes. But a phrase you said to me from very early on when we became mates going to the football and that more regularly was we live in different worlds.
Yes, we do. We do. Yeah, I can. I'm sure you're thinking along the same lines as me. Of one specific moment
and I'm going to tell the story. Paul and I can meet for Spurs in two or three venues. Normally, we meet, and we are going to stop doing that. There's a Witherspoon's pub in St Pancras Station, which I nicknamed the office because I had all my meetings there, because it was easy for me to get, or it's easy for me to get the high speed one train up from Kent, get off the train, and the pub's at the bottom of the escalator. So that became what I called the office. But Paul's also on a line. I could get off at Stratford, where West End's Carpet Stadium is, and we can meet there and get the train up to Spurs that way. So a couple of times we've met there, and there's a casino there, so you can go in and have a beer. So we had bought our beers one day, and we were walking back to, as I remember it, we were walking back towards the roulette tables, and our birthday's both 26. And we were having this discussion where I'm off feeling one, saying, look, anybody can do what I can do. I think we were probably discussing the remnants of the match betting. You've got to fucking sort yourself out. Anyone can do it. And you said to me, we live in different worlds. And we're at the roulette table by this time. And as you've said that, I've gone, don't be so fucking silly. Yeah. But as I'm saying that, I was putting six £50 notes on the roulette table.
To cash in for some chips.
And you just looked at me, hands up, and you went, you see what I mean? Different world.
That laugh is what I actually did, yeah. And then you realised quite what you'd done, and the timing of it as well. It was like you were saying the sentence and doing the action, all it looked coordinated.
Yeah, I did. So I sort of said to Paul, don't be so silly, we're not living in different worlds, as I threw 300 quid on the table and he stood there with his pint of Guinness. I hasten to add, I wasn't having a £300 spin. We were changing them up for £1 chips and having a little spin around the 26, and we actually made some money, didn't we?
You always do. You always hit 26. I don't know how you do it. You always hit 26.
Pure luck, son. It's no skill to it. It's just pure luck. So it is. You do have this thing. I mean, buying you a dinner or something, it's hard work. You do have this thing that we live different lives. Again, that's part of it for me. You guys have got to goals, aim higher. Aim for the skies and you've got a chance. If you're aiming for the ceiling, that's all you're going to hit. And it fucking annoys me. You and Kev and all of you. You fucking wind me out. Right. Couple more topics just to cover before we depart this, because we will do this again. I've got to ask you this, and we've had this discussion, and people have witnessed this. I remember the Curry House after the football match, I think, with Ryan and Dave Bell. Maybe Lee was there when I lost the plot completely. What has Boris got to do for you not to vote for him?
I was no fan of Boris, in all honesty. When he was Mayor of London, being a taxi driver, I drive the streets of London quite a lot, and I think he made nothing but a pig's ear of London. No big fan of his. But in terms of the way he's taken on the prime ministerial role, I think he's done an excellent job. He clearly grasped what everyone wanted to get this whole Brexit thing sorted. Whether you're a Brexit fan or anti, he grasped that the majority wanted it done one way or the other. So he's done the right thing. He was proactive, made a big success of what he intended to do, and done it.
Does he talk bollocks, though?
Oh, yeah. He's a buffoon.
Have you and Boris got something in common that you both talk a load of bollocks?
No, I wouldn't say that.
And what about my mate across the water? What's your views on him?
Well, Donald.
Yeah.
Similarly, he grasps what a large part of the American public want. He's improved their economy. He's improved their employment rates.
Oh, fuck off. I've got to go. I can't talk to you. No, guys, this is a great time to fucking end this. I cannot talk to him when he's coming out. This is what I have to put up with. See, imagine this in a pub. I'd have this for another hour and a half now. Absolute, complete and utter bollocks. Right, Paul, I want to thank you for coming on and doing this.
He is a buffoon, though. Yeah.
He's Donald a fucking Trump. Massive buffoon. Right, I'm going to leave this. I'm going to say now for people, I'm not sure how the sound's going to come out because you've obviously not got a microphone and I have, but hopefully people will be able to listen to this. Hopefully people appreciate the fact you've come on. I certainly do. I think people just thought I was going to come on and rip it out of you, but I'm hoping they've picked some little nuggets up, in particular to setting goals and how they look at their betting. I have no doubt that we will progress you forward, and we can, when we get some sport, perhaps do another one of these and update people on the position.
I realise now more than ever that it's a long game. That's the thing. If you want to say to people, what have you learned so far? It's a long game.
Yeah, good. And if you could use this time that you've got off, one, to do my Excel, preferably not on Excel 2007, something a bit more fucking modern, so we're actually on the right page, and look to just get one golf handicap would be lovely.
Yeah, I'll use my club one then, that's fine, 18.
Yeah, oh, fuck off. Right, okay, have a lovely day. No doubt I'll see you on WhatsApp over the course of this day, and I will... I'll get this on the pod and I'll speak to you later, but thank you very much for coming on.
Look, one more last word from probably the whole FCS community. Best wishes to Art.
Yeah, no, thanks ever so much. Yeah. I've had some positive news today, so hopefully he'll be back out. And like you, he'll be fucking annoying me soon again as well.
Good man.
All right, son, I'll speak to you later. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, cheers, Ian. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed that. That was Paul. Bit of laughs, a bit of banter, but some serious stuff in there. The betting experience was without doubt so frustrating. I mean, the money he made was peanuts. I didn't give the figure, and I won't give the figure, but 8 accounts doing that. I think those of you who've done it know what sort of money he should have been making. And it was not even close to it, so... It did wind me up, but he's a mate and I wouldn't fall out with him, and we're on a path now. But just interesting stuff about the goals and his ambition. He is without doubt somebody who, you know, if his household bills were £1,000, he's happy to earn £1,001 and live from month to month. And we're trying to change that so that, again, if you read The Slight Edge, actually trying to save money and get money behind you is the way forward, so that he's got a buffer. And I think obviously with times like this, people are realising that. But joking aside, I love him a bit. He's a good lad. And I appreciate him coming on, and we will do it again. We are betting together. He's doing a tremendous amount of work, and I will update. We'll have another one of these and update people on his position, perhaps 6 months' time, see where we're at. But I'm going to get a couple of other FTS members on, ones that I've not known so long and different stages, and I just think, you know, they add a little insight for you guys who are on. But right, let's get down to the nuts and bolts of today. No singing today. Got a joke of the day, playing poker in America. Cowboy at the table, he asked me if I could help him round up 18 cows. I said, yes, of course, mate, that's 20 cows. You're rolling in the aisles. You're rolling in the aisles. Book of the day. This is a good book, but it is aimed more at American sports. But it gives you a good idea back sort of into how the other side works, how creating lines is based, as I say, on US sports. But I know some of you like the NFL and the basketball and the baseball. But there's bits in it you can take out for any form of betting. It has got a bit of maths in it, me saying the other day, but I just think it's more a look at the other side, and it's more about how the markets work as opposed to how to make bets yourself. But it's the thought processes that I think you want to have a look at or read. It's one I read, I enjoyed it, so that's all I'm really giving, is giving you books that I enjoy, and that is The Logic of Sports Betting by Ed Miller and Matthew Davidow. Logic of Sports Betting by Ed Miller and Matthew Davidow. And as I say, that is it is more based on American sports. The actual front cover's got an American football on it. But it's one I think that if you're interested in any form of betting is worth a read. The recipe of the day, I've had a request for a dessert recipe, so I'm actually going to give you two, because I asked the guy what he likes, and he said he likes chocolate, likes meringue. So firstly, I'm going to give you a little chocolate torte recipe. for desserts. I have to say that I do make the odd dessert, but Sam is the dessert master in our house. Invariably, if we're having meals, I'll do the starter and main, and she will do the dessert. And this, obviously, I think you need to be a lot more precise in measurements, where I just sort of say, put a bit of turmeric in, bit of this in, bit of that in. This you do have to be right. So you want, for a lovely little chocolate tort with a sort of soft centre, 200 grams of unsalted butter, 200 grams of dark chocolate, minimum 7% cocoa, and chop that up, 4 eggs, 200 grams of caster sugar, 50 grand of plain almonds, 50 grams of plain flour, 50 grams of ground almonds, and some either cocoa powder or icing sugar for dusting, whatever you feel. And we're going to serve this with an ice cream, which you don't need an ice cream maker to make, which I'll do in a minute. I've opened the back door to the garden for the dog to run around, because Sam's up in bed, and dog barking, it's having a panic attack. Right, so heat your oven to 180, 160 if it's a fan. Butter and line a cake tin, a loose bottom one, you know, one of those ones where you can push it out through the bottom if you can, about 20-25 centimetre cake tin. Put the butter and chocolate into a pan and melt it until smooth, gentle heat. And while it's melting, you leave that just on a gentle heat, really low. While that's melting, use an electric whisk, beat the eggs and sugar together. So your 4 eggs, your 200 grams of golden caster sugar, beat them until it's sort of thickness of a custardy type thickness. Once your butter and chocolate's melted, pour that into the whisked eggs and sugar and fold it in using a spoon or a spatula. Mix the flour, almonds and 1/4 teaspoon of salt together, and then fold that mix in until it's all even, and you'll have a nice brown sort of creamy mix. Spoon that into the tin and bake it for about 35 minutes. Just check it. You want a nice crust on the top. The soft should then be a little bit gooey. Leave it to cool down. Take it out the tin and dust it with your cocoa or icing sugar, and serve as you would any other cake. So that is really simple to make and lovely. And then, I know if you haven't got an ice cream maker, you can still make this. And this dessert goes lovely with butterscotch ice cream. So basically, this ice cream is a no churn. You can make anything with it, but then you can add flavours to it. So it is only 3 ingredients. And again, Sam, she has upgraded to an ice cream maker, but she has made this many times. And all you actually need is some heavy whipping cream. So what we would call double cream, heavy whipping cream, the Americans call it, but double cream, a tin of condensed milk and some vanilla extract. And basically just mix the three together. So the cream and the condensed cream equal measures, and add a few drops of vanilla extract. And that is it. Put it in a metal container is better, just because it freezes better. But if you've got a Tupperware one, then just put it in Tupperware. Whack it in the freezer. If you want to flavour it, and as I say, butterscotch is really good. Once you've made it up and you've mixed the cream, condensed cream, and the vanilla extract, you can add what you like. If you want to add a fruit coulis to it, if you want to add butterscotch to it, if you want to add chopped chips to it, whatever you want, add it at that stage before freezing it. Whack it in the freezer. Job done. Simple. You've got a nice handmade ice cream without much hassle. You can literally add anything you like to it. So yeah, that's that. That's all you need, really. As I say, double cream, condensed milk and a bit of vanilla. Mix it all up, job done. And because you like meringues, of the guy who asked me, I'm going to do this as well. Eat and Mess, which is an absolute beauty. You've got to make meringues. I think he said he likes meringues and strawberries. We make this with strawberries, raspberries and blueberries all mixed together. And we make a raspberry coulis to mix in with it. So To make your meringues, you need 6 ounces of caster sugar and 3 egg whites. So you whisk your egg whites until they form soft peaks, you know, when you turn the bowl up and they're not falling out. Then add the caster sugar slowly, a bit at a time, until it's thoroughly whisked in. You're going to smash the meringue up, so it doesn't really matter how it goes on a tray in the oven. Just get it we tend to put it in circles, you know, take spoonfuls and put it on a row on a lined baking tray. Put the baking tray in the oven, cook it on about 140, 150 for a good hour, and then just turn the oven off and leave it in there, and that'll dry it out. It'll cook it through, dry it out. Can take it out when the oven's cold. When you're ready to get your pudding together, as I say, we use raspberries and we add a bit of cassis. So we basically blitz up some raspberries and add a bit of cassis to that to get a coulis. Chop the other fruit up, smash the meringue up, so you've got a bowl of smashed meringue, a bowl of chopped fruit. Mix the two together with some, again, you can whip up some double cream. You can either buy thick whipping cream or whip up some double cream to form a thicker cream. Mix that in and stir the coulis through it, and it's an eat and mess, really nice and simple dessert to serve up. So there you go, you've got dark chocolate cake, easy make ice cream, or an eat and mess. There, enjoy your birthday. It was somebody who's having a birthday. I'm only going to do one more recipe this week, and that will be deviled steaks on, probably do that on Friday. Right, so we've done the joke, we've done the book, we've done the recipe. Right, you want the stat. Where are we? Don't even know where that is myself. Oh, here we go. Yeah, this is a good one. It's the Premier League, and this is a laying method. You could back, if you wish to, the other side, but a laying method. Hold on a second. You know I'm going to say it. Bear with me. Just got to get the right price bracket for you. But the Premier League, most exciting league in the world. Just need to filter. I've cleared it completely. I am a numpty. There, so you're all on tenterhooks now. Right, here we go. The Premier League only laying under 1.5 first half goals, or backing over 1.5 first half goals. Now, quite often if I play the backside, which I may do because these are short odds and there'd be more money usually set at the lower price than the lay price. Let's say, for example, it was 4.6. So if I was risking, if I wanted to win 100 quid, I'd be risking 360. So that would be my risk. Quite often I'd have my risk as the back bet, so I'd have 3.360 at 1.29, and pretty much end up in the same area, just because it would enable me to get my to get the full amount matched up easier. So if I was backing this, I would, whatever my liability on the lay side would be, I would use as my stake on the backside. But otherwise, you know, if you're only using 10 as 15, 20 quid, straight lays. Laying under 1.5 goals in the Premier League when the price is between 3.65 and 4.6. And it has produced 276 bets since September 2017. Pretty much an average of about 10 bets a month. For 72 points profit. Worst losing month is 3.5 points. There's only been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 losing months. The worst one, as I say, is 3.5 points. The best winning month is 8.5 points. This is to the lay price. So laying under 1.5 goals, Premier League, 3.65 to 4.6. Raw stats, again, as I say, can be looked at further. I've mentioned in that video the other day, and I've mentioned it on the podcast, about periods where it stood still. March 19, so you'd have had March, April, May 19. The profit stood at 53 points. October 19th, sorry, although you've had the summer, it's still come back October, September, October, so 6 months there. The profit only stood at 57. So you've had 6 months where it's just made 4 points. Wouldn't be enough for you lot. You've packed up. It went 53 points the end of March, 57 points the end of April, 56 points the end of May, 52 points the end of August. You've definitely gone by then. You probably thought, oh, May, I'll see how that starts the season. It's then lost 3 points in August. That's you done. It's actually then had, since September, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 winning months on the spin, to be stood at 72 points. So there you go. So it's, again, as I say, raw stats, something you can deal with. It will have periods where it stands still, but laying under 1.5 goals, 3.65 to 4.6, again, you could trade, you could back the overs, trade, remove your stake when a goal went in, whatever way you want to do it, just giving you the raw numbers. So hopefully there's something in these for people. I hope you're enjoying it. I know getting some good podcasts. Vinny, basically from Chelsea Fan, told me the podcast was shit until the lockdown. Thanks, Vinny, Chelsea Fan. See, just basically said load of old shit, Ian, but now you got a bit more time, it's a lot better. As I say, I enjoy doing them. I do them for myself. I'm hoping you are picking snippets up off it along the way. That's all it's about, and a bit of fun. I do appreciate Paul coming on. Forget the numbers on the TV for the coronavirus. Try and enjoy things. Try and keep teach your kids things. Try and learn new skills. Get out for a walk. And I will be back with you tomorrow morning. So have a fantastic Wednesday. Enjoy yourselves, and I'll be back with you tomorrow.